Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Patty Chapata from Innovative Life Solutions Incorporated. So tell me a little bit about Innovative Life Solutions.
Sure. Innovative Life Options is a nonprofit organization, and we offer resources and training and advice and, I guess, guidance to people that choose a model called In the Company of Friends. The people that get involved with In Company of Friends are participants or employers, and we provide them with the support they need to live a independent life in the community through self-managed goals. So we have resource coordinators that work with each of these employers or each of these participants who have intellectual challenges, and they support them through creating a budget with them, hiring, if needed, staff to help them stay in community, stay living independently. Some people need a whole range of staff options. Others, need a little bit less support. And that our whole philosophy is that self-managed care, really supporting independence and promoting those kinds of goals for each person and what that person can contribute to their own life and to community and those kinds of things. The In Company of Friends, which is the model that we support, that model receives money from the province of Manitoba, the Family Services Department. So there's a department in our government that supports people with intellectual challenges, and some people live in group homes, some people live in other kinds of residential facilities situations, but there was always this need for people that either, didn't want to live in those kinds of living situations, that, they wanted to live more independently, and then sometimes people just couldn't live in those kinds of situations. And so this model was created back in the early 90s by with Family Services, and they really saw a need for a nonprofit group to ensure that the model was implemented.
So in your times with the organization, have there been any challenges that have presented themselves?
Certainly, like life is, right? There's challenges throughout life. So since the 90s, there's everything from, ensuring that this model is available for people that need it. Sometimes with tighter budgets, people look at ways of, saving money. And so maybe family services might look at different ways of saving money, and sometimes that then impacts our organization in terms of ensuring that this model is available for people that need it or for people that want it. The whole communication or, like, not marketing, because that's not maybe the best word for it, but just, you know, making sure that people throughout Manitoba know about the model. Sometimes that can be challenging because a lot of our time and energy is put into supporting the participants who take on this model, and maybe we spend less time making sure that people know it's available. So, yeah, you know, that can certainly be challenging. Different areas, because Manitoba is a province that is somewhat vast in terms of regions. So, you know, you have a couple of strong cities, Winnipeg and Brandon, that have lots of resources and supports. But then some of the communities outside of those larger centers, are a little more challenged when it comes to other resources that are available and that you can tap into. So sometimes, you know, we have to be very innovative and creative in how we help support someone to live independently. So that can sometimes get a little challenging if people need some staff with different kinds of expertise, and depending on where people live, sometimes that's a little more challenging. And always, you know, being competitive in terms of when the participants' budget is a little tighter and trying to pay staff to work with them. Sometimes staff get wooed to more of that institutional setting because the wage might be higher. So sometimes that's been challenging over the years, but we try to continue being very innovative there's lots of positives about working with a individual one-on-one versus in more of that institutional care. So we really try to feature those kinds of things.
So to look at those success moments, can you take me through a couple of them?
Some of the success moments? Oh, wow. There's been so many in Innovative Life Options and in Company of Friends. And I wish that I probably should have asked one of the employers, one of the participants, to speak with you, because I'm not sure if in my words I can express some of those successes as much as they can, but I'm going to try. Recently, we met with the Minister of Family Services, and one of our employers came with us, and the minister asked that very question. And just to listen to this individual talk about how amazing and wonderful they feel their life is now that they have moved into a situation where they live on their own, they're able to make their own independent choices, they're supported the way they need to be supported in the community, they feel a real sense of worth this individual didn't feel as much when living in a different setting. We have other examples of successes where people have lived in, and, you know, I'm not in any way saying that one is better than the other. I just, in some situations, this particular individual was living in a group setting that was not good for them, and they once they moved into the Company of Friends model with the support networks, with the staff that individual had, making independent choices, living the life that they really wanted to live as best they could, their well-being, their life just improved in their eyes and in many other eyes. And I forgot to mention that a huge, like, really important piece of this model and something that makes it very distinctive is that in the Company of Friends model uses a support network philosophy. And so each individual, before they can receive funding from Family Services, like their budget to help them live in the community, our resource coordinators help set up a support network, which is often family members, but often non-family members as well. And they support that individual to live in the community. They don't get paid. It's just a network of people that want to support this person in creating successes for themselves. Right. So we've had many success stories in terms of people moving from situations that didn't allow them to fully develop as a person to develop into very strong individuals. We've got people that were living in group settings or living in kind of a negative situation where now live on their own, have the confidence to work, have the confidence to go to the grocery store and make choices on their own and know that they're contributing to society in a very positive way. So, I think those are some of the successes. And as an organization, I think that we bring a lot of positives about the importance of self-managed and self-determination, and that's certainly a strong message that we are always, like pushing or exemplifying, and so those are all really good successes. We've gone from having, I think it was the 10 or 12 in the model at first, to we're up to 66 people, and throughout Manitoba, and we can see that this is something that should be offered to people and to those that have intellectual challenges that choose to live this way. And if this model can be promoted throughout Manitoba, I can certainly see that we would see that number grow in a very positive way.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, yeah.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned. The Downtown Music Initiative is providing a unique opportunity for young people to learn and to thrive from music in the community.
The DMI is a community program that offers free music lessons to students ages 4 to 17 who come from low-income families. It's run by volunteer musicians.
How can I get more information on the DMI?
You can contact me, Melissa Miner, at 226-347-6409 or visit our Facebook page, Downtown Music Initiative.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Patty Chiapata. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Jillian Lipman, the Epilepsy Support Center. So tell me a little bit about the Epilepsy Support Center.
So the Epilepsy Support Center was founded about 30 years ago, and it started in London as a support group for parents who had children with epilepsy and wanted to talk about it. Now we have staff in Windsor, Essex County, Chatham, Sarnia, and London, and we offer support services for families as well as public education.
So, can you tell me a little bit about the public education programs themselves?
Yeah, so one of our big ones is a grade 5 program that we have. It's called Thinking About Epilepsy. And this is a presentation that's been created specifically for the grade 5 that fits into the curriculum. And we do these presentations during the school year. About this year, I've probably done about 50 or so in Windsor, Essex County. And it has really been shown to help break down the stigma associated with epilepsy and teach children seizure first aid and what they should do if they ever see someone having a seizure.
So, in terms of the stigma you mentioned, are there any myths that you work on dispelling in regards to the condition?
Definitely. So one of the big myths associated with seizure first aid is that someone should put a spoon in a person's mouth when they're having a seizure. And this is a big one that we tell people not to do. Do not put anything in their mouth. They can't swallow their own tongue. They might bite their tongue, but it's safer than putting something in their mouth and chipping their teeth or causing them to choke. And that's a really big one. And the other one is just that people with epilepsy can do almost anything that other people can do. And just because they have epilepsy doesn't mean that they can't work or they can't go to school and things like that.
So how does the condition typically affect a person?
Sorry, what was that?
So how does epilepsy typically affect a person?
Well, it's different for everyone. Epilepsy can happen to someone at any age. And for most people, 70% of people actually, seizures can be controlled with medication. Now, it does take a while to get to that point between the time of diagnosis and the time of seizure control. Lots of different medications can be tried, and it takes a little while to get the combination just right. And in the meantime, it's really hard for people because they feel a loss of control. So they don't know when they're going to have a seizure. They are afraid of having a seizure in public, what might happen to them during a seizure. And also they lose independence. So people with epilepsy often can't live alone. They can't drive. So things that were so simple to them before, it becomes a hard task where they have to rely on others just to do the little everyday tasks like grocery shopping and things like that.
So in your time with the support center, what sorts of challenges have you seen?
Well, there's a few things. So for children, we see issues in school. And this could be that they're missing school days due to appointments, or maybe they're having seizures during school or before school, and they're really lethargic after, and it's hard to make it through the school day. But there's also a higher chance of memory, cognition, and behavior problems and or challenges with children with epilepsy. So those are the things that we work with the school and the families, kind of work through those. And then for adults, it's unfortunate, but we see it all the time. People are sent home with no return to work date set because their employer is uncomfortable with the situation. They don't understand epilepsy or seizures, and they think that the person's not is a safety hazard. They don't think that they can complete their job without being unsafe. So those are the two biggest challenges that we face.
So to look at the converse side of things, in your time with epilepsy support, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
We see successes all the time. So this past year, we have had a few people come to us with issues with their workplace. And one client in particular, I remember, he was kept home from work for 6 months. Even after his specialist said he could return to work, he was only on 55% of long-term disability because the employer and the insurance company kept finding reasons for him not to come back. So we were able to collaborate with the specialist, the workplace, the insurance company, and our client, make sure all the documentation was completed properly, make sure all the checks and balances were filled, and just to take away all of those reasons for him to not successfully come back to work. So now he's been back to work for over 5 months, and he's had no problems. Everything's been going smoothly. He hasn't had seizures at work, and it's been just a great situation.
So in cases like this, do you typically find that employers are open-minded and willing to listen to the facts about epilepsy?
So in the beginning, it's always a challenge, mostly because many people just aren't aware of epilepsy, seizure first aid, what triggers seizures. And so the education piece really comes in. And once we're able to talk to the employer and just teach the employer a little bit about seizure first aid, what triggers seizures, that helps us to break down those barriers. And that really is the point where the employer says, okay, we can accommodate this. We can make small changes so that this employee can feel safe and comfortable in the workplace.
So if you could send any one message about the need for epilepsy awareness in the community, what would it be?
I think that we need to talk about it more. A lot of people with epilepsy find that this isn't a condition that is spoken about. So people don't know what to do. People don't know how to act when someone has a seizure. And so it's really important that we talk about it, that we make people aware that epilepsy exists, that people live with epilepsy every day, and people can live well with epilepsy. And just by talking about it and saying, hey, I have epilepsy, it'll help other people with epilepsy to really open up and to feel confident and confident about talking about it. And that, I think, would be such a milestone if everybody would feel comfortable talking about their condition.
So what are the next steps for the support center?
So right now we're actually working on a really cool project. It's called Clinic to Community. And so what we're doing, we have funding from Ontario Trillium Foundation, and what we're trying to do is to set up linkages with specialists, with physicians in the community, CCAC, family health teams, community health centers. And what we're trying to do is set up referral systems so that when a person is first diagnosed with epilepsy, we meet with them and we share all of our supports that we have, and we can provide them with information and answer any questions they have. And by meeting with them at the point of diagnosis, we're able to help them from the very beginning of their journey. And we don't have people coming to us 5 years after they've been diagnosed in a crisis. They've lost their job or they're having issues with their condition. So we want to intervene right at the beginning and help people to recognize that they're not alone in this and that we can really help them out.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
No problem. Thank you.
Of course. During both interviews today, folks, the idea was presented about clearing up myths, whether it be the myth surrounding epilepsy or the myth that says a person with certain challenges can't live on their own. In disability life, there's no greater pitfall than these myths. Truth is, you see it a lot in workplaces and situations like that, in so much as an employer might take the attitude that an accommodation will be too expensive, be prohibitive, you need large, massive equipment overhauls. A lot of times, it's simply not the case. And even if some adjustments have to be made, fact is, we're talking about a person's right to succeed in the world, their chance to live at their best, to be productive, to contribute to the world. And we as a society should keep an open mind and base our actions on facts, not what we assume will be necessary in regards to supporting a person with a disability, but asking someone with the right information, making sure that we know what supports would be ideal for them. And from there, proceeding to do what we can. Might not be able to necessarily accommodate every little thing, but if we can give a person with a disability a chance to work, to learn, to succeed, to thrive, it adds a far greater quality of life for them. My own thinking from the standpoint of a person with a disability is they're looking for that someone. At someone to come along and to say, yes, this is possible. Yes, I believe you can succeed. Because encouragement is the beginning of accepting one's own strength, the beginning of realizing that all-important piece of wisdom that says things aren't quite as hopeless as they initially seemed. But working with others, building better communities, that's what it's all about. I'm especially pleased that Jillian mentioned there's a program educating young people in regards to these issues. For the fact is, if they understand it at a young age, they can grow up, carry that wisdom with them, and build for a better tomorrow. But it does begin at a young age. It begins with them understanding because a person gets around a little differently doesn't mean there's no common ground. Doesn't mean they're not somebody worth getting to know. And understanding that people with disabilities are just people is the beginning of having a common framework, a basis on which to communicate, Communication is what it's all about. Finding a way to reach that understanding, that common ground, whether it be with an educator, an employer, even another person with a disability. Just getting to understand what life's all about for them. It enriches us all when we gain that understanding and that appreciation for different methodologies, different ways of getting things done. Fact is, no one grows or expands their horizons by living in an isolated box without asking the questions, can something better be done for these people? By asking that question, one takes the first step of wisdom, recognizing that there is a need and asking what can be done about it. From there, taking the step, taking an action. I was also pleased when Jillian mentioned about the clinic process that's in the works, because it is of paramount importance for those working in the disabilities field to forever partner with the medical community, find out about the latest developments, share insights, share resources. In this way, you can come together and find what works the best. You can get rid of those processes that are outdated or ineffective and find something to make a real bit of difference, a real, meaningful impact on the life of a person with a disability. Everyone who has the courage to hold a door for someone in a wheelchair to help them get through, to offer a sounding board for an idea, just to say that I want to be the one to help you reach your best, has my utmost respect and admiration. The process of change and growth to support individuals with disabilities may in some cases be a slow process, but it must never be a stagnant one. If you set out to develop a policy or service for individuals with disabilities to make their lives that much better, monitoring is the key watchword. Making sure it doesn't fall by the wayside. Making sure that the things that are being done really are having an impact. Asking the questions. Taking a minute to say, do you think all that can be done for the disabled community is being done? And if it isn't, what can we do? What can we add? It's a very simple thing. If you take little steps often enough, you don't have to take giant leaps at a later time. You don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. If you work through the process, and day by day, try to make things just a little bit better, a little bit more understanding. And in this way, person with a disability and the community around them both grow stronger through mutual understanding and mutual respect. Of course, we as a society must be open to change and growth. If we close our minds, if we say we've apexed, we've reached the best we can ever do for these people, that's when we really lose it, folks. Really lose focus and our ability to change and to adapt. Life, all life, is not about stagnation. It's about going forward, seeing what the next great advancement can and will be. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.